So I've been literally sitting here in the background just listening to you all talking shit about us.
I can't believe you heard about the geese.
The best part is the 10 minutes of geese. The 10 minutes of animal and goose talk.
I've heard a good 5 minutes of it, yes.
So yeah, Tweak probably hasn't noticed you, but I think it's a good idea to keep people in for like a number for a couple of minutes just to humble them before they come on. They should do that every time. Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Contact Lost of our WTC Creme de la Creme series, where we interview the last year's top 10 teams before we go into the event itself. Tonight we've got a bit of a surprise because co-hosting with us is Nathan from Stats Check. Great to have him on. You've got the usual duo of Tweak.
Hello everyone.
And myself. I don't know why I'm gesturing, because you can't even see it. And then what appears to be on the right of me on the screen, we have Pumba from Team Poland.
Hello, everybody. Nice to be invited again.
Yeah, pleasure as always. I think the intro has been long enough, so I don't know. Can anyone start us off with a proper question to Pumba?
I can, and but I will not start it off with the proper question to Pumba. I wanted to start with baptism by fire for Nathan, actually. So here we go. I mean, you came to a Polish podcast doing today an episode about Poland, the country of Grzegorz Brzęczyszczykiewicz, Grzegorzuka, and Szczebrzeszyn, that are genuine Polish words, names, and names of places. So now we need to check how well you do. So let me show you something on the screen once I find it.
Brother, I am scared. Yeah, I am scared.
Boomer time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is it going to work? Is something going to pop up?
So there you go.
I wasn't expecting a quiz show.
I know.
Which is a terrible idea for an American just in general to be quizzed.
What you should be seeing this on the screen. Try and read that.
Fuck, I can't.
I couldn't read that, by the way. I could not read that for the life of me. I'm just going to say that.
I'm glad that there are just two Polish people saying I couldn't read that
one.
I could try.
Je wish, Nick? I don't know.
Very nice. That's... Very nice. Close enough.
Close enough, to be honest.
Close enough. Yeah, all right, let me stop sharing. Yeah, that was just to test how well you do. But we don't intend to use any Polish here today. Actually, we're going to talk about Team Poland. And now we can kick off the proper conversation. So, Pumba, Poland has been to the event since its very beginning, I think, since 2007. So
I do believe so, yes.
Yeah. So before we go to talking about the this year's team, let's say, what makes us, the Polish people, want to go back to that event over and over and over and over again? Is it the event itself that has something special about it? Or is it the Polish people that are special in a way?
That's actually a very difficult question to answer, I feel like. To be honest, I don't have the experience of some of the like super veterans of the team, right? We have people like Skark in our team this very year, and he has been in the team almost every year. He has been he has attended every single ETC / WTC that has ever happened. So I think his perspective on this is very different to mine. Definitely there is a, if I were to guess or like take this like responsibility to answer for the whole group, I think it's gonna be different kinds of people. And for me, that would be definitely ambition. Like, it's just that, right? There is no real money involved in playing Warhammer, at least for now. Not like earning championships doesn't actually make you make a living out of this. And I think the fact that we have historically been so successful just like pumps this ambition even harder, right? And because you have this incredibly high, the goalpost is so high up that aiming for it is kind of very difficult, very challenging. And if you have the right group of people, which we do happen to actually find every single year somehow, you are just trying to reach those goalposts. It's a great achievement to accomplish, right? Because you have this history of us doing great things and the ambition that drives us towards every single event. This is kind of the most important goal to achieve for a 40k player, at least for me, in my view, right? There's things like LVO, for example, which is a singles tournament, one of the biggest in the world. It is not the biggest in the world, by the way. I will not stand for anybody calling LVO the biggest tournament in the world. But it is one of the biggest. It's the most known, for example. And that is very different, I feel like, from this tournament that is basically like Olympics of 40k, right? And because this is this international status of actually proving your community, representing your community, proving that your ideas that you've kind of generated as a community are better than other ideas, right? You're not just representing yourself. You're actually representing the community of 40k players of the certain country. And you're trying to prove with your skill and your like research preparation that your ideas are better than other countries. So this kind of rivalization on the national level is, I feel like, very different. And I think this is why most of the people in Poland who have ever attended WTC are so into that. Like, we actually focus very hard on that because this is kind of this Olympic status of the event.
Yeah, okay. I wasn't expecting such a thorough answer to the very first introductory question, but oh my God, you nailed it.
It was a difficult question.
He did very well, given that when the first ETC back then took place, he was probably being breastfed.
If I was alive at all, I'm not exactly sure. I think it's been like running like 20 years, so I might have been like six or something.
The first one was in 2007, right? That's the pre-WTC.
So I was actually 11. I probably could walk back then. Definitely not probably.
By the way, is your cat dying or like fighting an aggressive animal? Or
that is a very good question. I'm going to check in a second.
Yeah,
she's just...
I was wondering what that was.
I think she's just very angry at me because I've come home just like a couple of minutes ago and I haven't like properly
given
fed her and covered her up.
Maybe she was attacked by wild geese.
I were not given.
I saw the episode that you recorded with some lemon where the cat was actually climbing that shelf behind you or something like that.
Behind the door. She does that sometimes. She also, whenever I'm actually doing podcasts, she's very active. For some reason, I think this is because I'm talking to people and she wants to be very involved in that.
Attention whoring a little bit. Yeah, as cats do. So, okay, Pumba, the WTC website, if and by the way, we will link the WTC website in the comments of this video. The website says that historically, the Polish average placement at that event from its beginning is first place. Like, that's the average that comes out of the calculation. I don't know, Nathan, I see that you were appalled by this. I didn't make this calculation.
So I think there's an important thing to talk about when we talk about averages.
Let's go. That's but the scientific
instead, what I'm going to say is that Poland has like one placement that's just way better than Germany's. Germany has like 1/9th place placement. And because you guys are within a percentage, basically, of one another, like, the team Poland gets the first place position, but Germany has won more WTCs than Poland has. And it makes me wonder if there's like, is there a rivalry there? Just looking at the numbers, do Germany and Poland consider each other like the two brothers fighting for the crown every year in the WTC?
Not brothers, definitely not.
Well,
from what I've heard, because the German and Polish story at like in ETC has been a very long one, and it definitely was a rivalry there. From what I've heard from veterans, some of the people that are in this year's team, for example, there used to be a real, like, super high rivalry between the teams. And this happened, but basically, it was whichever team won fighting each other that was going to probably win the event. Now the field has really changed. And I really feel that. And when I speak that, there is very much less like heartfelt rivalry and much more camaraderie in the general WTC space, I feel like. I think it's very competitive, but I don't feel like there is a single team that like anybody is actually, I don't know, trying to beat for whatever reason. We are just trying to win the event. And definitely there is a like maybe in the back of your head, you're always thinking, let's do better than Germany. But especially now that the WTC has grown so much and so many teams are taking it so much more seriously, I think it's very much a tournament between more than two teams. I would never say that right now it's either Germany or Poland, for example. There's so much team that are like absolutely gunning for the win this year, for example, that it wouldn't be honest to say which, like, either of us are definitely going to make it, for example, to the top spot.
It sounds like we have gone, you know, the road to get where we are today was so long that the rivalry evolved more into like a lot of mutual respect. That the teams, like when you have the draw, for example, when you find out with against which teams you're going to be playing, Germany definitely seems like an opponent that you need to respect, you need to take into consideration, you cannot, you know, scoff at or anything like that. So that's what I noticed, at least.
Yeah, definitely, I would agree with that. Although I was saying that, like this whole beautiful thing about there wasn't like a single team that everybody's trying to beat. But at the same time, hashtag anyone but England, please.
I was actually going to say, I was like, I have enough WTC people in like the podcast back chat for us for StatCheck that I just knew. I was going to say, isn't the exception that just everyone wants England to lose, though? Like if England went 0-8, or I can't remember how long pool play is versus the playoffs. I am very new to WTC, so coming into this was very strange for me. If England just didn't win any games, nobody would shed any tears, is basically what I heard.
But isn't it the
yes,
same?
Yes, that like, is with, definitely with... the case, and that is a motion I will succumb. Anyone but England.
This something like with football, like, you know, when every single time when they play football, there is a World Cup, and the English are chanting like, it's coming home, it's coming home. Everyone else in the world is like, no, it's not.
Yep, and it is the same in WC because they think they made the rules so they like are good at the game. They are not. Don't believe them.
Shots fired.
I think we should stop because we will be hosting them next week. So
that's even better. You're like encouraging me at this point.
So next week I should be on again, and I can say so. Last episode I was on with Team Poland, and Team Poland said.
I also know, I think, everybody in that team. So.
Yeah, they know what to expect when we have you on. So, okay, coming back to what I wanted to be a question, but Nathan somehow stole the show and asked his. So the question was, you know, the Polish team has been in the event for like year after year, quite successful. Do you as a team member and you as a team as a whole, do you feel the pressure the pressure, for example, from the Polish community that, you know, the expectations are high. How are you handling that?
Yes, like straight up, definitely yes. I think the fact that we have done Hysterky so well is definitely laying on us every single year. Last year was actually my first WTC ever, and playing some of the games, you try to focus solely on the game, right? I think focusing anywhere, like your mental space should be that you are just focusing on the game being played right in front of your eyes on the table in front of you. But in the back of your head, there is definitely like outside pressure coming from the fact that you are expected to go at least top three. Like legitimately every single year that we are not making podium at WTC, I think everybody would be very disappointed in our result. Like, and it's not even saying that the, I don't know, community would be disappointed. I think our like players, us, would be disappointed with the result, right? So the combination of like pure skill, the history, is something that we need to deal with, and is something that simultaneously definitely makes us stronger, because of that pressure, I think we are also preparing more, just straight up. I think that pressure also motivates us to bring our best game, right? To spend as much time as possible to deliver to those expectations. But you definitely don't need to work on your like mental to don't let that pressure overtake you while actually playing for the game and while being at the event itself.
So what about last year's event? I mean, have you had a chance to sit down and analyze what might have cost you the final against Australia? And have you taken any steps from that to potentially mitigate the situation this year?
Yeah, definitely. The game against Australia, I think most of us will be analyzing for like the rest of our 48 careers. It is this kind of experience that if you play in the finals and you know you're gunning for the win and then you lose, it's gonna just stay in your like head forever, I think. And the difficult thing definitely is like extracting useful lessons from that. And I think we have managed to do that. I think the main takeaway that we have is that the most important part of WTC is not actually the skill difference between teams. I think there's at least 10 teams, let's say. That's a very like off of, based on nothing. Let's say
10 rough teams. Estimate.
Exactly. Who are exactly evenly matched in skill. I would be willing to say that. I think the skill is not something that actually differentiates the team right now, individual skill of players. I think preparation time and how much time you actually put into preparation is what makes a certain team win WTC. It is my opinion right now. And I think Australia has done incredible things to prepare themselves for everybody. And they have done incredible things to prepare very unusual, sometimes even off-meta choices that made other teams like us not being prepared for them, right? Because you cannot prepare for every single list that every single player in this tournament is bringing something off-meta and being so perfectly prepared with it against the field is what actually caused them to win, in my opinion. And this year, I think we learned that relying on something, bringing something maybe a little bit off meta, maybe a little bit off the beaten path, maybe relying more on player comfort, maybe, instead of bringing just the best thing that we can like think of, might be the way to actually win the event, because that will force other teams to not be perfectly prepared for what we are doing.
Yeah, I mean, given the release of the new edition, it feels like there might not be a defined meta up until the event, so it would be hard to bring some off-meta or countering meta armies. Do you think that this situation evens the field between teams? As in, you've mentioned there are a number of teams that you feel are like equal in terms of player skill. So does that kind of, the fact that we've got the new edition, does that amplify the chances to win for even more teams?
I don't necessarily think so. It's just that it amplifies the conclusion I had after the last finals, which means we have very limited time now, like incredibly limited time, to figure out what we are bringing, what's how this edition feels like, how it plays, how we can bring proper armies, how to make the top 8 team comp. There's so much data to be gathered, so much playtesting to be done, and such a limited time for that, that I feel like the time commitment right now is even more substantial than last year. Because last year, even though the Nephilim meta dropped, I think that's changed like some people's armies, right? I was one of the people, for example, that couldn't bring his Thousand Sons or whatever I was playing at the time and needed to switch to a new army. But that would maybe like 3 or 4 people. Right now, we have to figure out whole 8 armies for the whole new meta, probably new terrain system, new missions, and we have less time for that than last year.
But so then again, every single team has the same time, right?
Yes, definitely. But it is how much of that time, of that month, will you actually spend doing that? Because for 95% of us, this is still our hobby and something we do after work, which is super difficult to do, right? If you could just take a 2-month vacation and just do 40K, for example, I think that team will just win straight up. I think if you had all the time in that month to spend on just 40K, I think that would give you the biggest advantage you could possibly get.
Do you think the next layer of that then for expression is also in pairing with a new meta? The people who learn those pairings the quickest will have an advantage going into 10th and going into WTC?
Yes, definitely. In the sense that the pairing process itself is not something difficult, I feel like. Like everybody has at least a couple of people or some people in their team that just have learned how to do pairings. All you can actually rely on and how good your pairings are is just data. And that data is very hard to narrow down. It's very hard to get right. I don't feel like going off of just statistics will ever, for example, give you good results in WTC. I think just going off, let's say we have, I don't know, 1,000 something, let's say even 10,000 games regardless of 10th edition. I think just using that data, I don't think it's actually going to do you any good using that in WTC. I'm going to be straight up honest. I feel like doing that, you just never figure stuff out the way it could be. In which I mean, what actually wins you pairings is flipping matchups, for example, right? It's something that happens. If you manage to flip some matchup, you will probably win the round. And flipping the matchup would be something like having answer to First Defender Elder, right? It is exactly how we've done so well last year. We had that figured out so well because we knew how to flip that Harlequin versus Elder matchup. If somebody, for example, now finds 2 armies to answer Elder, which are completely broken, that team and are like reliably stomping them, I think this team is going to have incredible advantage. So in this sense, the pairings are like figuring pairings is more about figuring the meta as a whole, right? it's not just doing the pairings. I think it's more about what you put into those matrices. Yeah. And that is very difficult.
So knowing that the 10th edition is on the way, did you...
I mean, oh, it's right here. It's boiling.
Sorry, come again?
It's right here, and it's such a shit show, by the way.
We'll get there. But before we get there, I just wanted to ask, and we forgot to mention that at the very beginning because we wanted to jump into the fray so quickly. You are not the team's captain. You are one of the team's selectors, right? So people who That's essentially correct. Have huge influence on who is on the team. So with that context, knowing that the 10th edition was on the way back then, what was the key for your choice of the players? Did you go with the more seasoned ones who adapt easier, who have played through various editions and it's, you know, it's a breeze to pick up a new edition for them? Or perhaps newer players with an open mind who can just switch to anything without any problems? Which one was it?
Yeah, so definitely there's a mixture of that. I feel like there definitely wasn't a key of choice, like you need to make this and this point to be on the team. It's never that it's easy to pick a player. I think we definitely emphasized, how would you even describe it? Just players that show that they are willing to spend time and like fully commit. As I've mentioned, because we've taken that after last year WTC, we've just figured out that commitment and practice is the most important thing. This year, we've prioritized players that we know are going to put 100% of what they can towards preparation. And they've shown this throughout the year, for example, and this is why they are on the team. That we now know in the midst of the 10th edition right now, that they will be putting hours, they care, they have ambition, and they will prepare the best to their ability. And I think this is the key here. Definitely there are some players like veterans who have switched editions 5 times, maybe more, and who are used to switching systems, to writing new rule sets, to like make stuff work in the new in this new environment. And they are newer players, but players who are just so committed to the cause. I've seen them play 20 games of 10th edition already, for example. Right? So there's a mixture of veterans and newcomers, or like people who have been to 1-2 WTCs. It's all about dedication, more or less.
So not knowing like a lot about every country's individual selection process, what does Poland's selection process kind of look like in the broadest sense when you're selecting mm-hmm. team members? Because every country is like a little different.
So our system basically looks, how to explain this in the most concise and not like prolonged way to give you the gist of it. We have a system that the team selectors each year are themselves picked, or rather you apply to be a team selector. Then they are chosen from the candidates by the coordinators of different centers of play. So each city, for example, in Poland has a coordinator of play, and they are responsible for voting on stuff like regulation changes, tournament regulations, assigning tournaments and stuff. And they are also responsible for picking team selectors. So last year, for example, the team of three of us, Maison and Duda applied to be the team selectors. We were chosen. And now we have the obligation to choose the team. But in the midst of this, there's a national league, and the top three of the last season has automatic slots in the team. That's the quick answer, but this is a very evolving, like process that, that is constantly evolving and is changing, and like, should the top three be in the team? Should the top one be only in the team? Should the selectors have free choice? Stuff like this is always like a very heated topic of discussions in Fora.
So this is something a recurring struggle to have.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, exactly.
All but I'm hearing is that I'm here to answer loaded questions.
It is a loaded question, because if you start digging into it, it's a rabbit hole, really. But we know something about it. That shouldn't see the light of day. But maybe this year something unprecedented, well, I think unprecedented happened, because we had the top three of the league who essentially worked their way up the roster throughout the year by attending singles events. And these people, I think all three of them, essentially gave up their spots and said, hey, it's really cool that we are in the top three, but we would like to go through the selection like everyone else. Is that correct? Or am I like misinterpreting something?
Basically, that's what happened, throughout the season.
And out of the three, how many made it onto the team eventually?
Two of them.
Which is...
So Skark and Victor are on the team, and they were just selected by us in the selection process.
Mm-hmm. So what did it take, for example, for, I don't know, for Victor to get on the team? Because, again, the community is so competitive, and there are so many people willing to be on the national team, that being just the best singles player doesn't grant you a spot anymore. So what else did he have to do to actually get selected onto the team?
As I've mentioned, he just showed incredible levels of dedication. I think he has attended like 6 international events since the beginning of the year. Like, he has attended pretty much every single international event that anybody from Poland or like the Polish team has gone to. We are talking like ITT with my squad. We are talking Alpine Cup. He has gone to the French Wargame Day, the huge French event with Meissen. He has basically shown that he's very willing to grow as a player. And he has also shown this in his development of his skills. After he has won the league, I think he was like half of the player he is now. And I'm genuine in saying that. That is my feeling. I think now he's a good player on the table. But now he also understands what the team plays, for example, is about, how important estimations are getting it right. He just developed his skills and showed extreme dedication and willingness to play the game and develop as a player, just grow his skills. And this is just how he got onto the team, right? This is basically in line with what I said previously. To be on the team, you need to show dedication and like real drive to be the best you can. So just not just, okay, so what he could have legitimately done, right, is say, okay, I've made the top one of the league. I've won like some or like 5, I don't know, huge Polish singles events, and I can just coast. He could have done nothing. But he just decided to grow himself as a player, attend incredible amounts of, spend a lot of money, let's be fucking honest, mm-hmm. And just constantly evolve as a player to learn new skills that are visible right now. If you like compare him to his first teams events and him now, he's just like 2 times better at it. That's my opinion.
So yeah, is it okay to go ahead?
No, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so it is. Have you guys announced your lineup then for the team?
Yeah, I think where has it been announced? It's been so long. Like, each day for me is like a week right now. I would like say a month ago or something.
Something like that, because in the meantime, you've managed to record like a series of podcasts about every single guy in Polish, but still. I've listened to all of them. It was like 2 a week, maybe. So to cover 8 people plus the associated staff and so on, I think it's a month, something like that.
Yeah,
the
coaches. Yep.
Who are the members of the team then? I'm curious. Who are the playing members of your team?
So it's to start a lot of, it's me, it's Meissen, and it's Duda, because if you have three selectors, they will obviously always choose themselves to be selected, because this is how just anything works, right? It's just your responsibility. But in all honesty, the team of three is there to make sure that a player cannot choose himself, basically, right? The other two need to choose them.
That makes sense.
So you don't have a vote on yourself, if that makes sense. So three of us did make it. Then we have Victor, who has won the, as we've discussed, has won the league, the National League last year. We have Skark, who is a super veteran. We have Leshu, who has attended WC last year, for example, and has been in team, I would like to say, three times already, and like one time in Mercenary team, very developed and experienced player. Then we have Guto, who is just Necron's overlord master, fucking crazy man who is playing TTS all the fucking time and has done incredibly well last year. Like, I think he was he was definitely the top scorer in the team last year.
He was.
Just one of the most skilled players in the world, like, period. I'm missing, like, one person.
Crazy. Still.
That's crazy. Yeah. So Crazy, who was supposed to attend last year WTC and got just struck down with COVID literally 2 days before he was supposed to go. He has made the team again. Same thing. It's all about dedication. And he has like proven that he switched armies multiple times throughout the last season and also attended multiple international events. Just a very competent group of people who have shown that they are willing to do their best and like prepare the best they can.
I won't lie. I also selfishly asked the question so that I can figure out how to pronounce everybody's names.
We are all using, of course, we are all basically, except for Duda, who is very simple, using some kind of nickname, because that's apparently how European 40K works. I've learned this 7 years ago now, and here we are.
Yeah, it's just, I learned that it's not Madgson, apparently. So that's what I learned today. Just
putting it
out there for everybody. Yeah, exactly.
It's just my son. Is it your
son? It's everybody's son. It's
at least once someone said that stupid joke and not me. Thank you.
No problem. Always here to deliver.
So Pumbaa, you are really good friends with Duda. Duda, I don't know if he was appointed or if he selected this role for himself on his own to be the captain, but it's really like a genuine question from me. Do you think that he is going to have a tough job this year with a team of huge talent, but also people with different personalities and different experience, and also in the context of a new edition that is unlike what we've seen in the last years, that introduces a whole load of randomness, a whole load of unpredictability. Do you think that his job is going to be more difficult than our previous captains last year, for example?
I think his job will be definitely difficult. I think Team Capsa's job is incredibly hard. Just managing people, especially during high pressure situations as like attending WTC, is just difficult. Nothing is going to change that. Does the new edition help or not, or change things? I am not particularly sure. I think it's a little bit too early to say the edition is actually like super more swingy. It definitely feels like it. Maybe, but it's like 50-50. I think the most important thing is that he will just need to make executive decision sometimes on the spot, and that is just a lot of pressure on himself as well. And of course, he's still playing. So there she is. If his job is going to be more difficult than last year captain, no. And that is because last year captain, who was Typhus, was supposed to be a non-playing captain, and then he ended up playing the fucking tournament.
Yep. So thanks to the crazy count. Like,
yeah, so this is a difficult like achievement to one up, I guess. Is actually managing the whole shit and actually playing the 40K game. This year, definitely learning from that last year's experience, we have a spare player, for example, coming with us, who is going to be the coach, but he definitely can step up to be a player if something like happens. You just learn from your mistakes, right? You never repeat the same thing twice and doesn't it happen. We have also split the responsibilities of last year's captain. We have a proper head coach this year who is supposed to manage data, be overall just a helping hand in the logistics area, let's say, but also in the pairings process. The pairings are actually done by a completely different group of people than Dida, which is going to be me and Myson mainly, managing just that side of preparation and things. So learning from last year and what happened, just we have developed the team in such way that we are just now fuck up proof, let's say. At least we hope so.
Knock on wood.
Knock on wood, definitely. Like, hard on that. But yeah, I don't think his role is going to be as demanding as last year. Please God, hopefully. Because nobody wants to repeat that. Because I've seen Typhus after the first day, after 50 games at WTC. And his brain was just flowing out his ear in the evening. And I completely get that. So nobody wants to experience that again. But his job is extremely important and a very difficult and demanding one. Just, I think that the biggest thing is actually the pressure that is on him to make executive decisions on the spot, right? He's supposed to be the person who tells the player to push if they need to push. He's the player who tells the person to, you are supposed to lose, make it as close as possible, for example. And as I've said, managing people, managing their emotions, doing it correctly at the heat of moment is just difficult. It's never going to be easy.
Yeah, I remember last year when I interviewed Typhus, and someone he told me that managing those emotions, especially in those moments of trial, are extremely taxing, and to have everything under control, the emotions under control. I think last year Typhus introduced this ban on like social media and so on, so that, I don't know, you can confirm because you were there, but it did seem like the players from the Polish national team were actually not allowed to post anything on social media or go to social media, not to read comments in the social media, just to not let the pressure, the stress get into their heads. Are you going to be doing the same thing this year?
So there was no formal ban introduced. Nobody's like give up your phone. You will receive it back after the tournament. But it was discouraged, let's say. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a good choice. And I think we'll do the same this year. It's everyone's decision, basically, right? We are all mature people. We are all adults, at least officially. So everybody needs to manage what they can handle. If they would like to, I don't know, read the comments of what's happening, if not. For example, last year, we drew the first game, which was a big like surprise, right? It was basically like losing. Everybody was like, what the fuck happened? How did the Poland like draw Belgium, right? And there was definitely this moment of pressure on us. Can we recover from that? Because we've practiced for 2 years. There wasn't a WTC happening for such a long time. We've done so much to prepare. Are we just going to stumble right now, just fall on our face and keep losing or something? Are we not good enough? And I think discouraging players to I don't know, indulge themselves in this in this naysaying is not the correct word, but in this catastrophical theorizing.
Negativity.
Negativity is probably the best word, yeah. And just going into social media, going into Discord, reading, I don't know, negative comments, but I don't think there was actually a lot of them. Definitely helped. But I was one of the people that in the evening, when we were just going to sleep, I think I scrolled through some of the channels, and 99% of them was legitimately people supporting the team. And it was actually great, right? It was a very great, like, great encouragement. Like, after you, for example, after the second day, after we've crushed both Germany and France, just going there and just seeing the pride of some of the people, right? It's just a wonderful feeling. It gives you wings. It legitimately does. So there's like a balance between all of this. I think there is definitely not going to be any ban introduced in that. I think everybody needs to manage that, what they can handle and how they just react to those things.
Yeah, I remember it was a real party in the Discord back then. Everyone was posting the Pepe meme with the Polish flag.
That's what I mean. Like, after you actually do well and see so much encouragement and like just congratulations, for example, it makes you feel wonderful. There's no way about around it. So there's an incredible positive side to just see that kind of behavior from the people you are representing, right?
Yeah, and I also got to the point that if anyone posted anything with the smallest sense of negativity, they were just banned from the Discord for a time. So
that was a thing
for that.
I had no idea about it, by the way.
It was a thing.
It was a thing. Yeah, it did happen. I wanted to ask one more thing about the preparations, actually. So was there any focus on any preparation area? Like, did anything matter more during last season? Because I feel like a year ago, up to the event, TTS scrimmages were like the big thing. Whilst I don't think there were that many of them this year, for example.
Oh, there were plenty. There might have been less of them, but
yeah, they just didn't invite you, Joker.
Yes, we did.
They can see they're happening.
I think you were invited at least one.
I think
there was like, there you go. Fuck you mean? There weren't any. Fuck off. But for real,
I didn't say there weren't any.
I think there were a big part still. We've learned a lot from them. But this year, I feel like the biggest thing we've developed and managed to do is bring the national team, or like parts of it at least, to many international events.
And that's the reason I was asking this question, because that's what I thought mattered more.
Yeah, I think this year we very much, compared to last year, focused on bringing as many people as possible to international events during the season, to help them learn how to play with people from different nationalities under just different conditions sometimes than you're used to in Poland. I think this developed a lot of people just overall as 40k players. And this is definitely something I am very proud of that we managed to do, especially that all of those people who attended just committed a lot of time and money to go, right? And it's just dedication again. It is again on that theme of dedication towards improving yourself as a player. Of course, we also are trying to win those events, and sometimes we managed to, and sometimes we didn't. But overall, I think many lessons were learned. So yeah, that was the big thing this season. But we still try to at least maintain like the TTS scrimmages happening. Every single month there was one until like May or something. Yeah, I think the Team US one was May actually. So it's a combination of things overall. But yeah.
Nathan, do you want to ask anything about the WTC or the team itself? Or because if not, then we'd probably move into a couple of questions about 10th edition.
Let's move into the peeps that I know people are probably going to be tired of me asking, like, how does WTC team selection work a little bit? But I'm interested to know how many Wraith Knights the Team Poland is playing.
after, After today's 4 points on that announcement, I'm gonna say six.
Six.
It's either six or because there's like the Forgeable one, which is also like incredibly undercosted or some shit.
We don't know the
exact data sheet, but I just assume it's broken. It's Elder. You just assume it's fucking crazy. Or you just bring a River Titan or whatever it is called, Phantom River, the smaller one.
Oh, 1100 point. The 1100 point Titan, the Revenant. Yeah.
I think we are the current state of Elder in 10th edition. I would describe as you will be very you need to try your best to not bring something that will just absolutely demolish your opponent. Like, you are legitimate needs to be fucking up on purpose, I feel like. We are at this point. So it's anywhere between 0 and 6 Wraith Knights. It actually doesn't matter, I feel like. Yeah, I know it's a controversial take. I know the unit is just broken, also off of its ass. I think without it, it's still fucking insane. So it doesn't matter.
Who listen to us on Spotify and on iTunes and what have you, but not YouTube, you cannot see, but Pumbaa's signature actually is 10th edition hater. So I guess it's just
fine. Into this edition, and it's as I've talked literally like 2 hours ago with Anthony Van Elder, that is. He has used a very elegant comparison. This edition is like a sock full of fucking needles or razors. It hurts the more you like fucking push into it, the more it hurts. And I feel that's so bad right now.
Most of the other questions I feel like I would have that are like directly associated feel like information gathering questions from anybody who's not me. Like, what are Poland's factions of choice for like in 10th edition? But I'd be more curious. Go for it.
Sorry, like that. I skipped your question because just probably internet lagged out a little bit. You are free to ask any questions. Any. I will just sometimes maybe not answer them. So, this gives up too much information.
Oh, no worries. I was going to ask you what your top 10 factions were currently in 10th.
It can probably tell you the top 26 or how many are there in the game.
Legitimately, I'm not kidding. Like, I'm not trying to actually avoid the question. It's difficult. It's a difficult question that I've been super into figuring out for the last week, or not even, because I'm responsible for the pairings. I'm kind of responsible for picking the right armies, or at least gathering a team composition that is going to work. And except for a few very simple answers, like you bring Elder because good, you bring Space Marines because good. It gets Death Guard, tricky Adman. After that, right? And there isn't. I feel like if this edition just if you exclude the fact that some armies are just unplayable garbage, and exclude the fact that some armies are just incredibly bullshit, the middle is kind of okay, and I feel there's a legitimately interesting meta to be had there. The problem is also that this interesting meta to be had is jeopardized by garbage rules of 10th edition. By which I mean there are some changes that are just I don't enjoy at all. But even in that system, I feel like if some factions get the cut, because I don't believe like Death Guard are ever going to be good. I'm not just I believe in Santa, but not in Death Guard being good. Sorry. then figuring out the top 10 factions even gets very difficult, and I legitimately don't know it. And I think I can legitimately say I've spent at least 60 hours just trying to answer that question for myself.
I guess the real other question that I have is, what is the rule that makes you the most upset because apparently the rules are making you upset. And I want to know what the rule is that makes you the most upset.
The most upset. Such a long list. It's hard to choose from.
So let's go with the generic core rules and then army rules, if that helps.
No. I'm picking core rules. I think army rules are flexible sometimes, maybe except one of the armies. But
so in the meantime, maybe there is one little rule that you actually do like.
That's also a good idea.
Or absolutely no.
It's difficult to with rules. Even harder. To be honest, I'm gonna say that missions are fucking incredible. I so fucking wish 10th was just the evolution of 9th with this mission.
With the missions.
Holy shit, that would have been so amazing. But this mission system is legitimately the best thing they've introduced by a long shot. It's the best mission system we've had since the combination of Eternal War / Maelstrom that ETC nations were playing in 8th. And then, and then basically GW told everybody that they are playing ITC now, and it was fucking ass. Just putting that out there, that actually adopting ITC system is not good, by the way. It's boring. It gets really boring. Yeah, but this mission system is gorgeous. I love it with all my heart. I wish I could be playing a different rule set within those missions.
Okay, I'll rephrase the question. Wait, Pumba. So I'm sure that I just checked on YouTube. Over 6,000 people have watched or listened to the Fireside podcast, which is like 6,000 on YouTube alone. I'm not even going into Spotify and so on. So probably around 10,000, maybe. So pretty much the entirety of the competitive community. Do you agree with what they said? Like, their damning critique, every single bit of it. So towering, indirect, and so on, all of it. You agree with it?
Yes.
Right. I guess this sorts it out.
I have nothing to add. I'm going to be fucking honest. I have nothing to add. They've done an incredible job in explaining very in detail why something is bad, the way they've changed it or introduced it. They've also proposed like changes that I completely agree with. Like, if you remove pylons, then I don't know, leave consolidations in, for example, right? Just there are some changes to the rules that would make them better for me that they've proposed, and I do agree with them. So legitimately, I think their critique, like David's and Vic's critique of the edition, is everything I would be, I would have to say about the current rule set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think people have waxed pretty strongly philosophic about the negativity of 10th edition. Like, Fireside put out probably the, like, now I can't remember the word for it, they basically nailed their complaints to the door of the church in kind of the way that it goes. And
yep, that is exactly what happened, I feel like. It's legitimately sad for me. Because, of course, I am going to play WTC, and I can see this negativity like flowing into our WTC prep. Some games are just not fun. There might be out there, there might be a solution to play a better game, I don't know, a fun game, but we kind of feel like this WTC as like a gaming experience might not be fun for everybody. If you get bust under Erdogan right now, you aren't playing a game, and you've come all the way to Belgium to get fucking rolled with nothing to do. There's no skill involved almost, which is disheartening, and testing stuff can be disheartening as well because of that. Because sometimes you feel like you're not actually playing the game, you are just going through motions. And for a competitive player who is trying to always do his best, that's discouraging from actually trying and putting the time in, right? If I was to answer the question, what do I hate the most as a core rules thing, I feel like it's just melee, actually. Which is a weird answer, kind of, because towering fucking sucks. Indirect fire fucking sucks, sure. Like, losing psychic phase still sucks. But I just hate how unviable melee feels like. And it's a combination of the rules that made it this way, and just the fact that every Space Marine with Power Fist wounds everything on 5+. So it's the combination of the two things that just make me very disheartened towards them. Like, my favorite army in the game is Blood Angels. Holy Jesus. When I see a Sanguinary Girl profile and imagine it just smashing into any vehicle right now, I'm crying into my pillow. Like, brother, they are going to do nothing. And it just feels awful. And I need to get in through so much hoops to actually get them there. And then I cannot do shit if I charge like two units and I kill something, for example. That's just melee feels dead. Like, legitimately melee feels dead. And that's the worst part for me, because I feel like melee really was the key difference between exceptional players and like good players and then average players.
Yeah, that was that technical.
It was very technical. It was what you could do. You could argue you are pushing on the on the verge of what is allowed. Sure, you are pushing the rules. You are doing the jank, as you say. But in like playing WTC setting, right? Of course, we are talking just about WTC, right? I understand for the average player, even the average tournament goer, the system might be better. I kind of have problems why that actually isn't the case. But if it felt right, because in the WTC taking among the top players, everybody understands the jank, right? There was nobody would, you are doing the fucking consolidation, I charge in the opposite direction things. But you made it work. It was your plan. You planned it, and everybody understood what was happening. And that just allowed you more flexibility and to show off your skill and your planning, stuff like that. It is kind of gone. It is the saddest part of this edition, at least for me.
So does the team setting somehow allow you to bypass, perhaps, through pairings, through, you know, everything that teams do, to bypass that those difficulties that you're describing, that certain armies are overpowered and certain armies seem a bit weaker but can do well if paired well, for example? Is that a saving grace?
Absolutely. Like, Jesus Christ, if that wasn't like an 8-man team event, imagine playing singles. Holy shit, that's crazy talk. No, but in the 8 team settings, as I've talked previously, I feel like there are some armies that are way above the power curve, way below power curve, but there's a decent amount of armies that will play a proper game in the middle. Because that is the case, and because the teams are comprised of 8 people and 8 different armies, you will play some people will have a proper game out there, and those games will decide the whole thing. So there's still legitimate competition, competitive play to be had in this format, because it is the team's format. If I was to play a singles event right now, I would cry myself to sleep every single night, because I don't think that is actually possible to have a competitive event and competition that shows any skill, kind of, even. But in that format, you still can. Some people are going to get fucked. It feels bad, but the team versus team aspect will actually make it a competitive event. Still, a competitive game, a competitive match amongst 8v8, like between 16 people.
Sure.
So at this stage, are you actually like yearning for an FAQ that would repair what is broken and allow for a more even tournament? or would releasing an FAQ, I don't know, tomorrow, I think tomorrow is when the box gets released. So let's say tomorrow is day one. So are you still waiting for the day one FAQ that will repair the game, and or will it be a disruption to your preparations rather?
It's a difficult like topic. I feel like the day one FAQ is gone. It is the commentary. It's here. It is great. Don't get me wrong. I actually very much enjoy the fact that it exists. I think it's very comprehensive in some sense. I am waiting for WTC FAQ, which was due to be out yesterday and then today, and maybe it will be out by the time the episode airs. But definitely it will answer some of our questions. And yes, I definitely am still hoping that something happens in between now and the rules cutoff. In terms
when is rules cutoff for WTC?
I believe it is like 7th or 6th of July.
Okay.
Is the absolute cutoff for any publication.
So like 2 to 3 weeks.
The data sheet cutoff is in 2 days, so 24th of June. So everything that is released until data sheets that will be released after that, for example, I don't know if and when Forge World is coming out with actual data sheets and not just points, what the fuck is going on. But if it makes the cutoff, for example, it has until Saturday to make the cutoff.
Okay.
Yes, I am kind of hoping that this delay in like Forge World publication means that there's something brewing in the back end, let's say, of 10th edition, and that the absolute outrage that is just swarming the internet in terms of at least Elder, for example, will be answered in some way. I am hoping for that. But obviously, there's no way to know. It's just the hope. Because currently, I do believe that some armies like the aforementioned multiple times Elder are basically reducing the teams to like almost 6v6s matchups a little bit. Like, it's that bad. It's like Iron Hands 8th edition nonsense level. It's super bad.
You're just throwing one player under the bus, basically, at Eldar.
Yeah, and so you do that for both teams, right? And then you're playing 6v6. I would rather be playing 8v8, is the gist of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, what is Team Poland investing their efforts into now? How are you preparing on this last stretch?
So there's a shitload of testing. So many games are being played all of the time. And there's not a single day that I don't see people just practicing, just putting games in, figuring, like iterating their lists, iterating design. I am actually super deep into kind of theory crafting, as I've mentioned. Like I've legitimately have not played that much yet. What I've done is trying to gather information from what people are telling me to actually dissect it and make it into a cohesive team, right? So have an idea of what is going on through every single faction that is in the game that is being played and tested. And it's just a lot of analyzing work, basically. It's just a lot of reading people's thoughts or like conscious streams of consciousness just spilling out onto the discourse chat and then trying to like synthesizing it to, is this good? Or is this bad? Or is this iteration that is, I believe we are maybe on like 40th iteration of Necron's list for Ghetto? Is this one good? What does it play against? So I'm like super deep into theory right now and like trying to condense people's thoughts, opinions, their testing for now into something that's usable. And like managing people to I need to know everything about faction X, right? You are supposed to do that. You are supposed to bring me that info. So I'm also like managing people to give me their gather me the data so I can analyze it, right? So I'm managing people to do that. And then we have, if I manage to actually synthesize that into a 8-army team comp, then we'll be just practicing the fuck out of that and iterating on list after list after list after list. That's basically it, right? Mm-hmm. So you're just playing games, trying to figure out how the edition actually plays, how the army performs against different factions, what are all the armies all about. The problem with that is obviously until everything is, because it's a new edition, everything is good until proven wrong, except for Death Guard, because fuck them. So if you see the most obnoxious, out there idea that you absolutely don't believe will score a single point ever in the game of 40K, until actually someone plays it and proves that it's shit or good, it's considered to be good. It's difficult. Because I have said, limited time, limited resources, it's a lot of data to be gathered, to be actually processed, to have something out of it. What I can say is actually we are planning to have a great, major video call is not the right thing, a session of thinking and information sharing this Sunday, I think. So I'm hoping for that to be the day that I have all the information I need to actually send people off to do. I don't know. You play that army, go and play the fuck out of that, right? Because now some people are just switching between three armies, play testing them. Some people are not on their final army. I'm hoping by this Sunday to have figured out at least the first sketch of a team comp.
Awesome.
So I think I've been told I get to ask the last question.
That's great.
And we're going to go all the way back to the beginning, and I'm going to ask you to make a decision. Who will win? A European goose or an American goose?
Have I actually seen an American goose? I'm sure I have when I've been there.
Oh, trust me, they are wild.
They are... I'm going to say
when I say American goose, it's really a Canadian goose.
I'm
going to
say the American goose. I legitimately think that just consuming the fucking leftovers at the local restaurant is going to mutate them enough to the point that it is just unbeatable by the casual European geese living off fucking bread and just seeds. I think the aggression levels as well is just going to put it on over the top, and the American geese will take that fight easily.
We have our episode introduction right there.
I was like, wow, this is turning into a real easy win for the American goose. And I was like, of course it's going to be a comment about the American food system at the end.
Let's go.
You asked for it.
He never saw it coming, or did he?
You're not wrong.
I know. That's why it's funny.
Well, I don't think there is a better way to end this episode. So, first of all, thank you to Pumba for coming in and representing Team Poland in our WTC special series.
No problem, gentlemen, and thank you for inviting me again.
Always a pleasure. Thank you to Nathan for joining in, for being a co-host with us, and we are hoping to repeat this at least a couple of times before the event.
It'll be amazing. This was a lot of fun. Thank you for letting me be on here and not know anything about anything. It's great.
It was feeling is beautiful.
Legitimately, it's just so refreshing to have someone that is not so into WTC or having the insight of a team like Polish national team as those two guys are always on top of us. It's very refreshing to have those questions. You are
which
having an outside perspective. legitimately, you are just having an outside perspective, which I think is great.
Thank you.
And everyone who's listening to this, make sure to check out StatCheck if you already haven't, but I guess you probably have. And then we also had Tweak and myself from Contact Lost. Be sure to subscribe us, to hit the bell button, to find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, what have you.
Read the description.
Yes, everything in the link below. And also, if Team Poland wins the WTC this year, I want to underline this in every episode, Tweak will be doing a TikTok dance on our account, which has zero posts.
A lie repeated over and over and over becomes the truth, so you never know.
Brother, Anthony is getting a fucking Polish bison tattoo if you win.
Oh, do you have to win both singles and the team tournament, or do you have to win just the team tournament?
We have to play better than them.
Oh wow, that's a pretty easy bet for Poland.
I still
really
have some
the problem with that bet is also it's symmetrical, and I'm on the like other end of that, which there is a very distinct possibility I might end up with an Team USA eagle tattoo on my fucking leg, but I just don't allow myself to think about that too much.
But is it about winning or coming higher or ending up higher?
Just finishing higher than the other team.
Tweak, I'll do the TikTok dance with you if Poland wins the whole WTC. I'll do it with you.
There we go.
I'm okay with the TikTok dance then.
I'll do it with you. We can record it in parallel. It'll be great.
Awesome.
All right. And with that, we're off. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. And until next time, goodbye.
Bye-bye,
everyone.
Goodbye, everybody.